Hello, friends. Welcome again to our Sunday School podcast. Today, we're going to be looking at Matthew chapters 14 and 15. There's a lot in these two chapters. We're going to look at some miracles of Jesus. We're going to look at a very interesting interaction that he has, but we're going to continue to see the compassion and care that Jesus has for people. And we're going to continue to see his faithfulness, even in the midst of the lack of faith in the disciples. Hello, friends. It is a joy to be back with you looking at the Gospel of Matthew together. Today, we're going to be looking at chapters 14 and 15. No, you're not crazy. We did skip Matthew 13 because last August and September, Josh Johnson and myself looked at a number of those parables. So you can go to the website if you really want to listen to those. You may do so, but we're going to be looking at 14 and 15 today, and my guests are Ingram Link and Kathy Girardo. Ingram is our director of women's ministry. She has been here for over 10 years. Kathy has been an integral part of the women's ministry as well, leading Divine Design Discipleship for over 20 years. Welcome, Ingram and Kathy. Thanks for being with us today.
Thank you.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
Well, let's get our bearings straight here in chapter 14. We open with this scene with John the Baptist. We haven't heard about John the Baptist. He's kind of been in the shadows for a number of chapters now. Unfortunately, when we do hear about John the Baptist again, it's his death. It's his murder, actually. John had offended the palace, so to speak. He had meddled in the morality and the ethics of King Herod, and Herod killed him. And Jesus learns of this in verse 13, and we see something that Jesus did often, and we as Christians should do often, and that is to withdraw to a desolate place. Why do you think Jesus withdrew? Kathy?
Well, of course, we know that John and Jesus were cousins. Likely, they had a lifetime relationship. And of course, they were co-laborers in God's kingdom. And it's just a very sad turn of events. And so that's just such a picture to me of not only Jesus' humanity, but his heart of compassion and love. That what he wanted to do when he got that news was go and be with his father.
And if that's what the Son of God does, how much more do we need that? That sets the scene for two miracles back to back that are right up there. We're not going to rank miracles, but these are right up there with most impressive, I guess we could say, the feeding of the 5,000 and then walking on water. So the scene is set here. Jesus is in a desolate place and there's a great crowd. And Jesus has compassion on them. And this has been a theme that we've talked about, is Jesus's compassion, his care for the people, all sorts of people. I mean, we've looked at all different kinds of people that he has had compassion on through Matthew's gospel. The day is coming to an end, and the disciples, they come to him. How would you describe the disciples coming to Jesus?
I mean, they're like, hey, day's done. Lots of people. Get them out of here. Send them back to villages. Let them find some food. It's time to wrap this thing up.
Yeah, I think the disciples are hangry, right? There's no food. It's the end of the day. Jesus, on one hand, has compassion, and they are annoyed and frustrated with all of the people. Jesus just looks at them, right? They come to Jesus, and they actually tell him what to do, right? There's your first mistake. Telling Jesus what to do. And then he tells them what to do. They need not go away. You. So think about this for a second. These disciples, you give them something to eat. And so they look at Jesus and they're like, we've got 5 pieces of bread and we've got 2 fish. So just think about that for a second. We can actually affirm a little bit in the disciples. They at least bring what they have to Jesus, okay? We can affirm that. So they bring that to Jesus, and then it's just, I mean, it's this beautiful picture. Jesus asked the crowds to sit down. You almost feel Lord's Supper type blessing here, right? He takes those elements, he looks up, and he blesses them. And then he goes to work. And I don't know how this happened. He is the creator God, but somehow those loaves and fish just started multiplying. He gave them to the disciples gave them to the crowds. And it's just this cycle. But think about this. We know 5,000 men, and we believe that's not counting the women and children. So thousands and thousands of people. I mean, it must have been chaos.
Oh, and it's the end of the day. And you see these people, I mean, you just get this vision of these people wandering through with these baskets, just giving out food. There wasn't a Chick-fil-A they could order from. I mean, this is just like fast food at its best.
Yeah, when it says a desolate place, they were out in the middle of nowhere. And when they're done, there's too much. What are your observations? What do you learn? What do you glean about just Jesus from this encounter?
Well, I love the fact that he, after having hard news, after ministering all day, that he still wanted his flock to be near him. They need not go away. The disciples are saying, but Jesus. We all do the but Jesus thing when something's hard. But Jesus wanted them near. He wanted to take care of his people.
In such a generous way and gracious way. It was not, I mean, there was plenty. It was not just enough. It was not like the manna for the day. I mean, it was an abundance.
Well, I think that shows us people matter to Jesus. Like they count. Like he fed them. They had all that they could eat and there was some left over. And I do think we long for the day when we as Covenant do get back to celebrating the Lord's Supper, because we have this miraculous instance of Jesus feeding his people, but the Lord's Supper is a way that Jesus continues to feed his people. What do y'all make of, I think there's a right way and a wrong way to do this. What do you make of the disciples just bringing what they had to Jesus?
It reminds me of the widow that had the little bit of oil. It's such a great principle for living. So often we focus on what we lack instead of what we do have. I think God's word is pretty clear about if we'll bring what we have to him, he can do something with it.
Because it's not about us. Because we might have all the resources in the world, and we might have no resources, and Jesus can still work. Because it's not about us, it's about Jesus. Well, that flows into this next very impressive miracle. Verse 22, the walking on the water. So immediately, he made the disciples get in the boat and go before him. Okay, so Jesus is staying behind. He's dismissing the crowds. I wonder, what do you think that looks like?
When I read that, I thought, okay, so he's going to send the disciples away. He doesn't give them any instructions on when to come back or where to pick him up. And there's no cell phones. So you're thinking, what are they thinking? We're just going to leave Jesus here?
I think it's a picture of Jesus just continuing to care for people. I don't know if he was giving them a benediction or if he was, I grew up in a tradition where the senior pastor at the last stanza of the last hymn would walk down the center aisle all the way to the back, and he would say goodbye to everybody as they left, you know, the church. It might have been something like that, but it's a picture of Jesus continuing to care for people. Spoiler alert, there's going to be trouble on the seas. And yet what we see here is that it was Jesus's will, his direction, that they got in the boat, right? They're following Jesus's words and they get into trouble, which we could talk for 30 minutes about just that, right? Following the will of Jesus and the words of Jesus is going to get us into some trouble, but we're going to see here Jesus is always with us in the trouble. So Jesus, again, what does he do? He goes up on the mountain by himself to pray. Again, we see the importance of Jesus withdrawing to be with his Father. And if Jesus needs this, how much more do we need this? Evening came, and I mean, they are way out there on the boats, way out there, and they are getting beat up. The wind's against them. So think about this. I think the Sea of Galilee, it's either 8 or 11 miles at its kind of longest point. They've been rowing for a while. It's the fourth watch, and they're not making up any ground. And so they're terrified. They are scared. And Jesus comes to them, and they don't recognize him, which I just think is fascinating.
Well, yeah, you're not expecting on a boat in the middle of a storm to see Jesus walking across the water towards you. It makes more sense that it's a ghost.
Right. I mean, this is quite an indictment on the disciples. They are more likely to believe that this was a spirit, a ghost, than it was Jesus, who just fed thousands and thousands of people with just a few pieces of bread and fish. They see whoever this is, we know it's Jesus, walking on the sea. They're even more terrified, right? So if you're not terrified enough to be in this storm, they see someone coming and they cry out in fear. If we were to imagine this scene, all hell is breaking loose on that boat. But Jesus immediately speaks to them. The comforting words of Jesus. And actually, what he says here is, take heart, I am. That Yahweh burning bush language. Take heart, I am. This divine declaration, do not be afraid. We can sense the care that Jesus has, the power of Jesus' words, and here it is. For a moment, it might have worked for Peter at least. So let's look at Peter here. And this is amazing. We've seen pictures, and we're seeing a picture here of, look, disciples can believe and do great and amazing things because of Jesus. But disciples also cannot sustain faith by themselves. And when they try, they sink, as we're going to see with Peter. So Peter says, Lord, if it is you, notice that. What's Peter saying? What are we observing about Peter here?
He's heard Jesus say, it is I, but he's still asking.
He's still not questioning. Convinced.
Yeah.
He's still not convinced. If it is you, command me to come to you on the water. And he says, come. So Peter gets out of the boat and he walks on the water and comes to Jesus. Just imagine if you're the other disciples at this point. A couple of them might have even fainted. There's been a lot going on. Peter sees the wind. So think about this. He's fixed his eyes on Jesus. He's going towards him, but he sees the wind. The wind had overtaken temporarily the Lord's words. The winds were stronger to Peter than the Lord was at that moment. When the winds of the world are stronger than the words of our Lord, we can all relate.
Well, how often when we put our eyes on our circumstances do we start sinking? I mean, it happens every time. And you think, why am I sinking? And you think, oh, because I've got my eyes on my circumstances. If you're, you know, alert enough to realize, oh, I took my eyes off the Lord, and then I'm better if he's the one I'm focused on.
Again, that could be a whole podcast in and of itself. But you're right, Kathy. And the point here is Peter thinks it is about his faith. And so Peter, being self-reliant, starts to sink because he cannot sustain that faith by himself. And finally, we see words from Peter that reveal the posture that he should have had the whole time. Lord, save me. Now, we need to understand, I don't think Peter's faith meter was going down, and so he was now in 6 inches of water, and now he was up to his waist in water. No, I think Peter was drowning to death, and he was screaming, frantic, Lord, save me. And of course, what does Jesus do? He does. Jesus sees the desperation of Peter and saves him. In this tender yet firm rebuke, oh, you of little faith, why did you doubt? So they get in the boat, and the wind ceases because he is the Lord of all creation. And that led to worship. And we see this first confession. Truly, you are the Son of God.
Which is so interesting. I mean, they've had a day of healings and feeding the 5,000. Jesus is obviously sovereign over all things. And then they're in this place where they are so fearful and afraid. And to see Jesus have authority over the wind and over the waves, they finally get it. They finally recognize that he's not simply a prophet, that he's truly the Son of God.
Yeah, they get it temporarily.
Temporarily, as we shall see.
Yeah, we're going to talk about it because they're put in a very similar circumstance here in a little bit, and they forget everything.
And Dave, can I add one little observation? One of the things I liked about our two chapters was there's a thread of prayer woven throughout this section of scripture. When I read Peter's calling out as he was sinking, it made me think of what we all do at times, and that's spout out a panic prayer. I tend to judge those as a little bit less than kind of prayer than your basic faith-based prayer. But there was a little bit of faith in it. And what I love about it is that the Lord responded to it, even though it was a panic prayer. That just blessed my heart to know I'm safe to do that when I'm desperate.
And I think that desperation is where that comes from. And Jesus, in his compassion and his mercy, responds to that desperation in that place of total neediness.
Desperation. We're going to get back to that later in the passage for sure. Let's look at chapter 15, the first 20 verses briefly. This seems like a very cryptic, somewhat hard to understand episode with these Pharisees and these scribes. They come out to Jesus and they ask, why do his disciples break their traditions, right? Traditions, key word there. It's not the law that God gave, it's traditions, man-made traditions. And then there's this back and forth with Jesus and the Pharisees and scribes. And what was going on is that these scribes and Pharisees, they were devoted to God, but their devotion actually was failing to love their neighbor. And actually, their neighbor here were their parents. They were actually refusing to care for their parents, and they were using devotion to God as an excuse. There was a provision in the tradition where instead of giving money and taking care of their parents, they could basically tithe, an extra tithe. Well, the greed of the scribes and the Pharisees, because they were benefiting from that very tithe, if we extra tithe, we might add. And so there's this back and forth, and it's this question about cleanliness and what defiles. And the scribes and the Pharisees felt like it's all of these external behaviors and these external activities that could defile you or could make you clean. And so you're supposed to do these things and avoid these things. And Jesus just cuts through all of that. He shows us that the problem that every single one of us face is our own hearts, which would have been really foreign, certainly to the scribes and Pharisees, but to those listening, because they were so used to this moralistic behavioralism of the scribes and the Pharisees.
There were so many laws they had to follow to get to where they wanted to be. I mean, they had to keep everything.
Absolutely. And so what Jesus says is, look, your heart is your problem. That you're actually wicked deep down. So why do y'all think it is so hard for us to come to grips with the idea that our hearts are really that wicked?
We're proud. We're self-righteous. We really want to think we can be good enough. You know, especially in this day and age, we're educated, we're qualified. We can make it work, for sure. We can make it work.
And I think, too, it means if we admit that we have something other than God in our hearts at first place, then that means we don't get our way. As I was studying this passage, I was reminded of something Tim Keller said, and I wouldn't be able to quote it word for word, but he was talking about how the heart is the control center. And he said something along these lines, that our heart is what determines what occupies our mind, what's desirable to our emotions, and what our wills see as doable. So basically, if we say, I've got a heart problem, then we don't get to do any of those things.
That's a great way of putting that. All of those things are affected by our heart. And if our heart at its core is corrupt, if it's spoiled, then all of those other things are going to be affected as well. We've seen this in other places in Matthew, but we see it again here. Just Jesus is really coming after our hearts. That's what he wants. And it follows up this question of our hearts and of our appearance of being clean is followed up with just this fascinating story in 21 through 28 of chapter 15, where Jesus has this interaction with a Canaanite woman. He withdraws to Tyre and Sidon. That's pagan land, we might say, and behold, a Canaanite woman. So right there, it's just like, nope, Jesus shouldn't have anything to do with a Canaanite woman. She's a pagan and she's a woman. That's two strikes against her. So she's in that region and she comes out, she's crying, she's shouting. I mean, she's making a scene. What she shouts out, she's got great theology. Have mercy on me, O Lord, Son of David. Wow, listen to this profession from this pagan. And we see the need. My daughter is severely oppressed by a demon. And it seems like Jesus ignores her. It seems like Jesus is being rude to her, but we know that Jesus never sinned, so that's not what's happening. He doesn't send her away. And then the disciples come, and you hear the same, they just said it with the crowds, with the feeding of the 5,000. It's just like, would you just get rid of them? Just get rid of her. She won't stop yelling, and she's following us, and she's making a scene. Will you just get rid of her? And Jesus answers, I was only sent to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. We saw that in chapter 10. That's Jesus's first mission, right, is to Israel. And so it's almost like he's talking to his disciples, and he knows she's listening in. He knows she just heard that. And so she comes back, and I would just the boldness of this woman. The persistence of this woman. And she comes in a posture of worship. She kneels, and she says, Lord, help me. And then Jesus responds again. I think what's happening here, Jesus is admiring this woman. He's affirming this woman, but he's testing her too. I think he's actually doing that for the benefit of the disciples. It is not right to take the children's bread and throw it to the dogs. Like, ooh, eesh, Jesus. And I mean, this woman is sharp. I'd love to hang out with this woman. She's like, yep, you're right, Lord. Yet even the dogs eat the crumbs that fall from their master's table. So one of the things that this actually affirms is like, she's ecstatic. She's in the house that she could even get the crumbs. At that point, Jesus is like, oh, woman, great is your faith. Be it done for you as you desire. And her daughter is healed immediately. And so one of the things about this is we saw this picture briefly in Peter. He reached this point of desperation. But what we see from the beginning, this woman has zero self-reliance, right? She knows she can't sustain faith in and of herself. And she comes in complete desperation. And I read a commentator that said, look, you're not going to find a more desperate person in the world than a mother pleading on behalf of her daughter. You feel that here. And so she, you talk about caring about appearances. She doesn't care. She doesn't care that she's making a scene. She just cares about her daughter. And she knows that Jesus can deal with it. She knows that Jesus can deal with it. The disciples have really yet to sustain, at least, this type of desperation that they ultimately need when they approach Jesus, and they see this in a pagan woman. Comment on this passage. I'd love to know your thoughts about where do we turn in desperation?
Back to the heart. Where your heart is, there your treasure is also, Jesus tells us. And so that's where we turn. As to what's nearest and dearest to our heart. Obviously, this woman's daughter was nearest and dearest to her heart. So instead of having little faith, like Peter did, I like the word sustain that you keep using. Little can mean short, not able to push through the barriers. But yet she did. And I, as a mom, this passage has always been a favorite because there's nothing that can get you on your knees faster than a hurting child. I adore the picture that she paints of a parent interceding and of a true worshiper, that she worships Jesus before he does a thing. Wouldn't we love to say that for the disciples? But unfortunately, we can't say that.
But I love that she doesn't give up. I'm sure she hears the disciples saying, send her away, send her away. And she just keeps on. She keeps pressing in. And Kathy, I agree with you as moms. We're going to be really persistent for our children. And she believes and she is acting on her faith and what she believes and what she knows to be true. She is following up on that and she is not giving up on it. It's a beautiful picture of someone who really and truly is trusting in Jesus.
Yeah, and you can't help but contrast with Peter here. This woman comes in utter reliance. Peter came in self-reliance. Peter really didn't see the need for Jesus until he was literally drowning to death. He thought he just needed a little help. I just need a little help to walk on the water. And actually what he needed was Jesus to raise him from the dead. And this woman knows that her daughter is as good as dead if Jesus doesn't take on these demons head on and raise her to life. There's so much to affirm about this woman's faith. It's so clear that it was not in her own goodness, but in the goodness of Jesus. It was not in her own faithfulness, but in the faithfulness of Jesus. And so she's asking Jesus to give her what she doesn't deserve based on his goodness and his faithfulness. She is believing that Jesus is good and faithful in spite of her circumstances. And Peter is rebuked when he lets his circumstances actually dictate his faith. And that's a huge difference there. Peter sees a little bit of trouble and he starts drowning. But this woman really doesn't allow the circumstances of her life to dictate her faith in Jesus. She refuses to believe that the Lord will be anything but good to her and to her daughter. Well, the last part of chapter 15 here, verses 29 through 31, just I want to make this one note. He goes out again, goes up on the mountain. He sits down there. People are coming out to him. And it's just this beautiful picture of those who are in desperate need coming out and falling at the feet of Jesus. And I just want to make the point, this is where we belong as disciples of Jesus, that we belong sitting at the feet of Jesus because we really are that desperate all the time, all the time. But I do want to close in verse 32 through 39 because it's a word of warning here for all of us who call ourselves disciples. We find ourselves in a very similar place. There's a huge crowd. Jesus has compassion again. He cares for people. They've been with him for 3 days. They're starving again. He doesn't want to send them away. And so the disciples, it's almost mind-boggling. Where are we going to get enough bread?
Okay, haven't we been here before?
Yeah. Jesus probably rolled his eyes, sanctified eye rolling. And he says to him, well, how many loaves do you have? we're repeating the scene here. And again, just this time they have 7 loaves of bread and a few small fish. And of course, we know the story. Jesus again miraculously multiplies them and everybody has their fill. Here's what I would like us to end on. The forgetfulness of the disciples. It's the same scene in a different setting. And yet they completely forget in the power, in the competence of Jesus. And I don't want to be too harsh on the disciples because we are this forgetful all the time. So, would love to hear y'all's thoughts. What makes us forgetful and what can we do to remember?
I think when I hear us talking about forgetfulness and the words remember, I think about the Old Testament and I think about the Israelites forgetting over and over and over again of God's faithfulness. And I think about Joshua stacking the stones. And I think about times in our lives where God has shown his faithfulness and how important it is to record those things and to remember. It really is unbelievable to me because when we read this, it appears that it's a very short period of time from the first time Jesus feeds the 5,000 to the second time he feeds the 4,000. How could they forget so quickly? And we say that about the Israelites as well. How could they forget what the Lord had done? Yet we find ourselves forgetting over and over again. And I do think for me, I have to write things down. And I have to remember, and I have to tell the stories of God's faithfulness to me and to Dave and to our family, to our children, because God is faithful. It doesn't mean it's always going to play out the way we think it's going to, but He is who He says He is. Remembering that is really important as we walk out our faith.
I'm with you, Ingram. I'm all about keeping a journal. I'm all about reviewing my journal. I'm all about remembering before the Lord. You know, it says, remember the deeds of the Lord. One of the Psalms, that's kind of the theme of, or probably more than one. Remembering the deeds of the Lord and our testimony. You would think that the disciples would have been sitting around the campfire going, hey, I still can't get over those 5,000 people and all those 12 baskets left over. Can y'all guys believe we got to do that? I mean, why weren't they sitting around the campfire saying that? I mean, how could you not be talking about that? But I think you just get distracted with your next thing, and we're frail human beings who get tired and distracted. And Revelation tells us we overcome by the testimony of our mouth. So if we'll repeat to one another what God's done for us, I think it just cements it within us.
Absolutely. And I would add, not only reflecting on the ways that God has been faithful to us in the past, but also with others. And so we need community, we need worship, we need prayer, we need His word, we need the means of grace, a key way that God helps us by His Spirit to remember, because we are so prone to forget. Well, thank you both for joining me. This was a blast just opening up God's word with you. And until next time.